This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Our Master Cheesemaker program is one of the only two in the world. So it's no wonder every master in America has called Wisconsin home. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, October 19th, 2021, and we're recording remotely. We'll be talking with the folks from Industrial Arts Brewing in New York, and then we'll be talking on a little larger about local sourcing and craft malt around the country. So let's have everyone introduce themselves. So I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio, and Mike.
Hi, my name is Mike McManus, and I'm the Director of Brewing Operations at Industrial Arts.
Great. Gio?
Gio Wenzel, R&D brewer at Industrial Arts Brewing Company.
All right, man. Thanks for putting the show together, Gio. It's always great to have you on.
Yeah, man. Pleasure to be here, of course.
Okay. And Phil?
Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Newman with Main Stem Malt out of Walla Walla, Washington, and I'm also a director with the Craft Maltsters Guild.
That's great. And Kevin?
Hey, Jimmy. Kevin Kane, beer blogger at Casket Beer and contributor for PorchDrinking.com.
All right. So, Kevin, I think that I follow your posts on at Casket Beer on Instagram a lot, and I love the beers that you're drinking. I know you'd post about some of the Industrial Arts beers. I think there was a Helles Lager that you really liked recently.
Yeah. I really enjoy all of Industrial's releases, but I really connect with a lot of the lager type beers, and you know, there's a lot of seasonality there, and there's a lot of, you know, kind of nods to local ingredients and things like that, which I think is really cool. And especially with the Landscape series, there's also the charitable component. It's all just like kind of like a grand slam for me. And I'm currently sipping on the Autumn Landscape series right now, which is fantastic.
This looks good to me. I wish I had one. I'm going to get one tomorrow. Mike, do you want to give us a little, tell us, you're like the head brewer there. Landscape series is kind of your baby, right?
I have been working to sort of strengthen, working in my own small way to strengthen the New York State supply chain with grain and hops for a number of years now, since I've been with Industrial Arts and a bit before that. Landscape's a series of basically seasonal beers that are brewed with 100% New York State ingredients. And the charity component is that 100% of the profits are donated to local charities. A couple of them have been the Rockland Farm Alliance and the Fresh Air Fund. So really, we want to create a positive feedback loop where we can create beers that are representative of what New York State has to offer, strengthen the supply chain, and also give back.
Yeah. And how do you go about, walk me through Landscape. Is it seasonal? Are you looking to make a beer and then you're sourcing the ingredients, or you're starting with the ingredients and then making a beer?
We are letting, for the most part, the ingredients drive the beers. Local ingredients afford us the opportunity to have a direct relationship with the, in some cases, the farmer, but especially the maltster and the people who grow the hops. So we sort of look at what is available, and then tie that to a season. I think the first Landscape beer we ever conceived of was actually a fermentation forward beer, sort of a saison. For lack of a better term, that was a beer that we didn't feel extremely strongly about, and we sort of pivoted to conceive of these as lagers, which we think is just a more pure expression of the malt and hops. not letting any fermentation character getting in the way, but just making some simple, balanced beers. If you had told me, 10 years ago that a series like this would be possible in New York, I probably would have said you were crazy. But we've had a really, really good luck, making this series successful and making it grow.
Yeah, I remember back in 2014, we worked on one of the first local malt events in New York City, and your Jeff was part of that then. And for years afterwards, most of the brewers were saying that they really couldn't work with a local hop or malt, I'm just curious, at what point did Industrial Arts decide to do some of these special projects? Because you've got so many of your mainstays, like Wrench and everything. Do you produce it in the same place? Just give me a breakdown of how the operations work when you do these special series. And maybe Gio can jump in too, because I feel like Gio, are you developing your R&D, or are you working on some of the early recipes, or what are you doing now?
Yeah, I mean, a bit of that, new recipes, Mike's, just kind of tasked me too with, taking another look at our all New York ingredient, hazy IPA, yes farms, yes beer, because, as Mike said, we let a lot of the raw materials do the talking, and, hops are different every year. So, after selection this year, we're going to alter that recipe slightly just to kind of showcase the hops that we rubbed and selected from New York farmers. So a bit of that. And then I have been incorporating some all New York beers into our State of the Art series as well.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. Phil, I'm just jumping over to Phil too. Phil, you're based out in Washington State, but you're sourcing locally in different parts of the country. How does this industrial art stuff fit into the trends that you're seeing?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we had the pleasure of getting to work with Industrial Arts last year during the pandemic. We sent them a Hollis barley Pilsner malt that was a pretty special malt and one of the first of its kind in the country, and specifically made for brewers. I mean, really it shines for brewers that are using mash filters and not really benefiting from all the extra husk material that your standard two row or even six row barley variety, malting barley varieties have. So yeah, it was innovation brought us together, but certainly, and we were able to tie in, we were Hudson Valley Malt and they basically, received and milled grain for the grain that we sent out for Industrial Arts. But, if I had to summarize it, it's these craft maltsters are working a local to regional sourcing model in the various regions around the country. The Northwest has definitely its own scene going on, connecting local regional ag to local to regional brewers and distillers, and then New York State, frankly, was an early pioneer in setting a regulatory framework and incentive structure for brewers in the state and distillers in the state to actually buy local and catalyze this new craft malt segment, among other local ingredient sources like hops and even flour and all that. But so kind of look to New York State as a source of inspiration. We have over the past 6 years or so growing Mainstem, and this is a really nice opportunity to kind of cross pollinate both worlds. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense sustainability wise or financially to send craft malt coast to coast regularly, but yeah, we were excited about it to just have a chance to work with an innovative new brewery and just get some stories, new stories started.
Yeah. Gio or Mike, do you guys remember that malt?
Oh yeah. We
very fondly.
We love them all. And yeah, Phil, thank you so much for working with us, getting that out here. I know it wasn't easy or, economically, the most economically viable malt to use or ship or all that stuff. So I appreciate you working with us on that. And you were super gracious when, you know, going into it, I knew this is something we're going to try to move, like this specific barley variety or type of barley we're going to try to get grown in New York. And Phil, you were great, talking with Dennis, our local maltster, about it and giving us some info and obviously some trial brews to kind of get a proof of concept around this naked barley that made an incredible Keller Pils. And we did a hoppy blonde ale with it as well. So much appreciated, man.
Well, thanks for sending out the finished beers. They were delicious. And yeah, it's stuff like this. It takes a lot of extra effort, but it kind of keeps you motivated, these special projects.
No, this is cool. This is what I love now. I love all the craft malt and local ingredients. You know what Hudson Valley's malt's been doing? They've been sending malt down the Hudson River on a sailboat. I don't know if you've seen that, but just a year ago, people thought they were crazy. And now I don't know how many breweries from Poughkeepsie down to Brooklyn have been at least bought one load of malt.
Awesome. They delivered them in Brooklyn by a horse-drawn carriage. So there was no cars or trucks or anything involved.
Yeah, no, it's quite interesting. And Mike, Kevin, let's talk more about industrial arts, because I know you love them. And I remember it started with this like the metric pills and this, what was it, the tools. What's the tools beer? It was the
tools of the trade.
Tools of the trade. And, you know, it's I go everywhere in the whole Northeast. I'm seeing industrial arts everywhere. Is that what you guys expected? Did you expect to be making this much beer and getting the response that you have over the years?
I think we're really fortunate to be in the position we are in. No, I don't think we did not expect to grow this fast. We've been brewing for about 5 months in a brand new facility in Beacon, New York. So now we're actually operating two breweries. We also did not conceive of making exactly the beers we're making now in the beginning. So Tools of the Trade, which is a really simple, pale ale, sub 5%, Simcoe, some whole cone Chinook and Cascade, was intended to be our flagship beer. And we were, it took us a while to start making some hazy beer, which is obviously a large part of what we do now and something that we've felt like we've learned a lot in the process. But speaking of the landscape series and the New York State stuff, we're looking at about between 4 and 5% of our total volume with that stuff. But it's certainly a unique opportunity to know everybody in the supply chain and to try to strengthen it. And in an environment where beer is obviously global, its inputs are global and intertwined with so many market forces. We've seen what can happen with the aluminum supply and CO2. We think we're really fortunate to be in the Hudson Valley and to be able to use ingredients grown directly there in many cases.
Yeah. Hey, Gio, are you the one who's going and checking out the different hop farms and all that, or is that different people on your team?
A bunch of us actually do. I mean, our trip to Yakima this year was, Mike and I and Jess, who's our head brewer. And then, we joined some other industry friends out there. But yeah, we try to incorporate the whole team as much as possible. And then for the New York selection this year, we were just tight on time. As Mike said, we're, you know, we just built this big new brew house, and that still has some tending to. So Mike and Jess had to stay back, but I went up with a brewer from Garnerville, John Clancy, who's never rubbed hops before. So it's really nice to get, you know, some production staff involved and, you know, start getting their noses trained on rubbing some hops and that whole experience around evaluating raw materials. And then we do some remote selection too. So we were able to get a bunch of brewers from Beacon involved in the Simcoe, Citra, and Mosaic selection this year as well. So, you know, everyone smells and perceives everything different. So the more noses you have in the room, the more rounded opinion you can kind of get on a
single. Well, that's cool. It's also training then too, isn't it?
Always, right? Always learning.
No, you guys are. And Kevin, back to that autumn landscape. Let's talk about that beer. Kevin, how does it taste to you? You know, tell us what it's like for you, and then we'll ask Mike about how he made it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, on the can here, it says, you know, Fest Beer Lager. So, you know, you kind of, I don't know if it's intentional that that's supposed to indicate that it's not quite a Marzen, right? So it's not as dark as a Märzen. It's more like, you know, like a Fest beer. And it's got the alcohol, it's just under 6%. And it's just got, I mean, the malt character is just fantastic. You know, the hops are there perfectly, and it's in balance with the malt. And, you know, it's something that, it's the kind of beer that works well, like, on a warm, you know, early autumn day. But it's also something that, like, on a crisp, cool night around a campfire also hits the spot. And it's one of my, you know, generally speaking, I love the summer landscape too, but the autumn landscape, you know, I think you guys over there always seem to nail it for me and for what I'm looking for this time of year.
Kevin, when just you as a consumer, when you drink, I know it comes in a nice can, do you drink it straight out of the can or do you pour it into a glass, and what kind of glass do you use?
Well, So I am not a snob at all, and I certainly am more than happy to drink this beer straight from the can. But I am, you know, a bit of a glassware nerd, and I love the Willy Becker or the Willy Becker. And so I'm drinking it out of a Willy right now. It's actually from one of my favorite local stores, Beer Nog, and their Willy Becker. So
is that the 0.5 liter glass, the big one?
No, this is a little bit smaller. It's probably 0.3.
Oh, that's cool. And Mike, tell us about this beer, the autumn landscape Fest beer.
Sure. We made a Fest beer this year. We made a similar beer year before last. We took a break from the Fest beer last year and made our sort of conception of we call it a New York Common. Essentially a steam beer. Kevin's right. This is, I think this sort of toes the line between being a Marzen and a sort of a Munich style Fest beer, but we sort of conceived it as being export strength Helles, which is shorthand a lot of people use to describe these beers. It's a 14 Plato beer brewed with two row pills, a little bit of Vienna malt and some Munich, light Munich. And we use some beautiful New York hops, Crystal, some Fuggles from Peterson Farms, and a little dab of Mount Hood. You know, and we're just looking to make a simple beer that you don't really have to fuss over to drink. It's just intended to be balanced and sort of bring you from the summer into the autumn.
Yeah. What was the genesis of the landscape series?
Well, it was we wanted to make a commitment. So we sort of wanted to hold ourselves to doing this, to really being a part in strengthening the supply chain. So, we, you know, it's sort of a drop in the bucket as far as our total production, but We're buying for the landscape and Yes Farms beers about 45 or 50,000 pounds of New York State malt a year. And we're hopeful that that has a real impact on the maltster and consequently the farmer. We're very excited with this series to be creative in a box to sort of, see what the ingredients have to offer and then build beers around them.
Yeah. Gio, have you seen, or Mike, have you seen some of the farms or the processes that you work with? Have you seen them improve and change since you've been working with them?
I'll let Gio take that, but yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I've been up to Dennis's malt house maybe twice now. And I mean, in that short period of time, there was changes. He was putting in a new silo for storage, and which is huge because he was just storing barley in super sacks, which was probably pretty tough.
I was there just when he opened, and it's like early 2016. So
yeah. So he's come a real long way. And then as far as hops go, we're actually active members of the Hop Quality Group, which is kind of an international consortium of, there's a couple UK brewers that are members as well, but an international consortium of brewers that meet and promote hop quality to hop farmers and brokers, and with the main mission statement that hops are a food product. And so we got the opportunity to tour and kind of audit some farm and processing facilities this year in New York, which was great. I went to one spot that, I made a couple suggestions and then went back for selection, and they had already changed them. So they were taking things very seriously, and they're very interested in providing us with the highest quality products that they can, which is always great to see.
What's a basic change that a hop grower or processor can make to take that next step to be able to sell to you?
Hard saying, not knowing, everyone's a little bit different. So a lot of stuff, like a lot of common things we see in processing facilities is, we want to see more magnets, or we want to see covered conveyance. We want to see, signage around, as if it's a food processing facility, covered, if there's chains on the picker, we want to see those caged in so it keeps the workers safe, just a lot of stuff like that, just to promote safety for the farmers and the workers of the farm, as well as safety from a food processing perspective. It's typically a lot of little things,
I mean, we're looking for the same thing in New York State ingredients as we are and ingredients from Europe or the Yakima Valley, and that's quality and consistency. And as the Farm Bill has allowed some people to really grow their operations and become viable businesses, the equipment has gotten better, the knowledge sharing has gotten a lot better. And, 14 years ago, 15 years ago, there were farmers, who were dropping off wet hops in a garbage bag and sort of asking you to brew beer with them. And we weren't quite sure what they were. And, there's some of that still, but, the industry, with regard to hops and malt has in New York has grown by leaps and bounds, and other states like Michigan are really have their share of world-class facilities.
Yeah. Mike, you're a real pro. Where did you start, and tell us a little bit more about your career?
I started brewing at Omegang. I was there. I held a couple positions in production, and then I kind of did what Gio does now there for a couple years. At the end, I was there for about 10 years. I'd known Jeff O'Neill for quite a while, brewed some collaborations with him through Omegang, and knew him from BCTC, and knew him as so many of us do. You know, we talked kind of early on about industrial arts, and I was fortunate enough to be employee number one. And, you know, it's been a real pleasure. And I feel very fortunate to work with people like Jeff and Gio, both Jeffs.
That's great, man. And Jeff, I know you're from way back in Kingston when you worked at Keegan's. And then you went out west. Where were you working for a few years?
Yeah, so I started at Keegan's when I was in high school. Dream job, right? and then, you know, I did 11 years there, almost 12. And then went out to Colorado, to Fort Collins, to work for New Belgium Brewing Company. Spent some time there in the cellar, in the wood cellar, and then opened up like a little auxiliary pilot in Denver in a hotel in downtown Denver. So I pretty much managed that small 10 barrel system. And not too long after that, felt it was kind of time to move back east. And, you know, as Mike and many of us have known Jeff, anyone in the New York beer scene, from the early days, definitely knew who Jeff was. So, you know, he was obviously, we've always kind of been in communication anyway, and said he had an opportunity for me back home. So, you know, I packed my bags and headed back east.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff O'Neill's legacy is, I mean, to me, that's like the whole arc of New York State beer, right? It's like from Ithaca, Flower Power IPA, and then Peekskill, and just kept winning all the best awards. We love his beer. So I'll tell you a funny story. I remember it was must have been 4 years ago, around Memorial Day weekend, like 2017. I had on the DeChicos. I had Joe and Chris DeChico on, and I asked Joe a funny question. I said, "Joe, Memorial Day weekend, what are your top SKUs?" And he said, "Well, number one was Rao's tomato sauce in the can." And I said, but what about beer? And he mentioned a couple of the mainstream beers because it was the holiday weekend. But then he said the number one craft beer he was selling was Industrial Arts Wrench. And my eyes opened up and I was like, wow, because they're a big retailer. So that's a great story too. I tell you what, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about IPAs and state of the art, and talk with Phil about craft malt as well on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. In Wisconsin, cheese is our thing. Wisconsin is the only state in the country that requires a license to make cheese. From curds to cheddar, blue to brick, Wisconsin cheesemakers can do it all. We blend tradition with innovation to create an incredible variety of cheeses that you just can't get anywhere else. You've heard of a PhD, but have you heard of a PH cheese? Otherwise known as the Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker Program. This rigorous study of cheese is an elite accomplishment earned by only 80 talented cheesemakers in Wisconsin, and the program is only one of two in the world. Becoming a master cheesemaker takes 13 years and is basically like a doctorate in a specific variety of cheese, with intense requirements to succeed. Our Master Cheesemaker program allows makers to perfect both the art and science of their craft in a tradition so rich you can taste it. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Become a member and support us at heritageradionetwork.org. And you've heard sadly about the loss of our dear friend and colleague, Ann Saxelby. You can support the Ann Saxelby Legacy Fund in her honor. Go to www.slowfoodnyc.org/Saxelby/. And we are really saddened by her loss. But again, you can support the Ann Saxby Legacy Fund at Slow Food USA. So we're talking about sourcing local ingredients. Mike and Gio from Industrial Arts. We were just talking about the IPA and the legacy of Jeff O'Neill. Does the State of the Art series kind of have some of that for you guys? I noticed, talk about Jeff's friends, John Siegel and Siegel Hop Ranch. I noticed one of your State of the Arts features hops from Siegel Hop Ranch.
Yeah, John has become a good friend of us all. We love his hops. So we love supporting him. And he had this experimental that we rubbed on the table, and it smelt like grape. It was super interesting. And, you know, we wanted to make a couple beers for a few hop suppliers out there, utilizing some of their varieties. And John was definitely one of them. I think it was 2524 we used in a pale ale. Well, basically we put it in a tools of the trade malt bill and just subbed his experimental hop.
And for our listeners who don't know, sorry, John Siegel, his dad is Siegel Hop Ranch. It's like third generation, originally a New York State hop producer. Way back, I think in the 60s or 70s, they were one of the first to develop the Cascade hop, and it was used in the Anchor Liberty Ale. So there's a lot of history in that brand. So tell us how this state-of-the-art beer with the Siegel Hop Ranch hops.
That was, yeah, pale ale that we dry hopped with an experimental variety that we just that rubbed really nice, and we like the aroma, and it's in the beer. It turned out super delicate and nuanced, and we're pretty happy with it.
We also made two beers, two wet hop beers this year. One with Chinook from Weathertop Farms in New York, and another very similar. Very similar malt bill we made with some wet hops from Siegel Ranch as well. And both of those beers presented really differently. John, we just had lunch with John on Friday. John comes by Garnerville. He always brings about 100 sandwiches from an Italian deli around the corner. we laugh and enjoy a couple beers, and we just happened to be packaging this Washington wet hop beer last Friday, so we all had the opportunity to drink it together. And I think both Chinook versions, the New York version and the Washington version, made excellent individual beers, and it's something we'd like to explore a little more. The local variation of different varieties versus what people have come to expect from these varieties from Washington and Oregon and Idaho.
Wow, man. Hey, Kevin, have you had that new State of the Arts yet?
I haven't. No. But yeah, I'm looking, just hearing about this industrial wet hop beer, I'm excited to see that and try that.
Yeah. Hey, Phil, let's go to craft malt.
Let's do it.
Seems that hops is on everybody's, you know, label. You know, we just talked about an experimental hop and a beer that was made with it. Where's craft malt? You know, are we putting the names of the malts or the source of the grain on labels? And where are you going? Where's the Craft Maltsters Guild going with everything?
It's a really good question. So, I've personally had the pleasure, and Mainstem has had the pleasure as a business of, I would say, being a second wave craft maltster. So being able to like come in at a time where the first waiver is like, I would say, you know, Riverbend Malt and in Asheville and like Valley Malt in Hadley, Massachusetts, like. They took care of them, and others took care of a lot of the really beastly challenges, like figuring out how to train craft maltsters and also establish like a way for craft maltsters to send malt away and get both grain and malt away and get certificates of analysis. within the country. And anyways, a lot of great things that we didn't have to solve ourselves. But then this is like circa, we started planning Main Stem back in 2014 and plugged in pretty quickly to the Craft Maltsters Guild. And I guess over the years, it's always the years since, it's felt like, man, craft malt is just such an obvious thing to take off. People love supporting local agriculture at like the farmers market. People understand like, you know, agriculture is this thing that it's complicated. It's largely industrialized and centralized, and that we have a role to play in the products we purchase to like bring sourcing back home. But then you have like the craft beer industry at large, an artisan industry that really just, it was built on the backs of like really large malt houses. So all of that switch to have craft brewers and also distillers like getting to the point where they are buying substantial amounts of malt from local to regional craft maltsters is taken longer than I anticipated, for sure. But it's also like, I understand it. It makes a lot of sense that it has been that the transition would take time. I would say COVID, the initial reaction was, oh my gosh, like amongst craft maltsters was, oh my gosh, we were like finally finding our stride and like really some substantial success stories out in the marketplace. And then we get hit by this pandemic and all the brewers just shut down. Like all the most likely customers for craft maltsters, like smaller scale breweries that aren't locked into narrow margin retail situations. All of them were shut down. And so, yeah, we felt at first like this is going to set us back a ways, but it pretty quickly turned into a very, like, well, first off, people started saying like every average consumers now know the word supply chain and understand that like this is a complex thing that is like causing a bunch of people that they know problems, business owners and whatever, hospitals or and so that was one big advantage for us through COVID, is that learning experience about supply chains. And the other was this really substantial need to support community and use beer and spirits as a way to support community. So, and craft malt really is, when you strip away all the layers of it, it's about making these connections at a more local scale. So, I'm excited. I'm excited at, there are more people than ever just like reaching out to us about malt purchasing, getting an order in, and just asking questions. And so that's an emerging dynamic. We hear it like with my Craft Maltsters Guild hat on. I hear it from a lot of different maltsters that it's just crazy trying to keep up with business right now. So as far as getting malt on the labels, that's happening too. The Craft Maltsters Guild has a seal program now, the Craft Malt Certified Seal. And so we have basically, brewers are able to put a logo on their cans if they use more than 10% craft malt. It has to be like a member maltster for within the guild. And then they can also celebrate their brewery or distillery as a craft malt certified brewery or distillery if they use over 10% or 10% or more in their brewery or distillery wide malt bills. So that's kind of cool. It gives folks a pretty easy way to plug in and show support for this movement.
Yeah, and isn't the craft malt conference is going to be up northeast this year, right? Up in Maine.
That's correct, Portland, Maine. And it's mid to late February. It'll be in two different chunks: an in person 1 week, and then that'll be just a few days, and then there'll be a week pause, and then And then there'll be a virtual conference with not just repackaged, but new talks. And then also the in-person talks will be available to view. So pretty exciting. We did not have an in-person conference last year, or this year rather. And so it'll be good to get back. We try to tour as a community. This conference lands in different host cities that have a thriving craft malt and craft beer and spirits scene. So Portland, Maine is an exciting one. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and you got Blue Ox Malt House is up there. And I sat on some of the breakout sessions for the Craft Malt Conference earlier this year, and it was some good conversations. Hey, before Mike and Jeff, before I ask you more about malt, I want to ask Kevin. Kevin, you always one reason you're on is you always have the best questions. what's on your list? Because I'm sure you want to ask about certain beers.
Well, yeah. I mean, I actually wanted to ask a little bit more about malt. And to me, it's one of the, you know, it's just such fascinating ingredients, so different than the other four, you know, the other three base ingredients, because, you know, you start with this raw ingredient and then, you know, it doesn't just go straight to the brewery. It goes to a maltster, right? You've got the grower and then you've got the maltster before the brewer uses it for their beer. And to me that's, you know, interesting. It makes it unique. You've got these different skilled people that are, you know, working on this ingredient before it's used in the beer. So I'm curious, like from Phil's perspective and also from Mike and Gio's perspective, like where do we need to go or what needs work, you know, to keep improving malt for brewers in the beer industry here? Is there more of an issue getting farmers to grow like good quality grain, or is it, do we need like more skilled maltsters that are cranking out, you know, good stuff for brewers to use?
Good question.
Good question. So what's it go first, Gio or Phil?
I'll take a first crack at it. I guess stepping back a little bit, agriculture at large has sort of, it's split into two modes, kind of small, really small scale, localized production. And growing and processing of things, and then like mega scale centralized, you know, largely large region or global extent. So there's a really big void in the middle for capacity to like efficiently get crops like malting barley or other malting suitable grains grown, stored, pre-processed, in this case malted, and delivered at the right times that customers would need it. There's a lot there. And so storage capacity becomes really important. So a farmer, it's fairly easy to find a grower to grow malting barley. I think in most states, and in a lot of states, there's a decent enough chance that you'd get a good quality, but like the trick the commodity market just sucks up crops as soon as they leave the field, by and large, but a specialty industry like craft malting or malting in general, you really need to like take that grain out of the hot seat, get it into storage. Often that happens on farm. You know, you get it assessed for quality. You set up a delivery schedule for when, you know, when that's going to be sent off to go get cleaned. Typically cleaning for craft maltsters right now is not handled at the malt house. So it's like this other step. And so there's trucking involved and so there's a lot of these like relatively straightforward, seemingly simple, obstacles or infrastructure pieces that just need to be built out. And until we get them built out, it's like you have maltsters storing, as I think Gio or it was Gio or Mike said it, but yeah, maltsters storing like raw grains in super sacks, like large amounts of super sacks, and which is problematic and at the very least awkward. And when you're like, until you overcome that, then prices are like, it costs a lot. It costs a lot to turn grain into malt when you're doing it awkwardly. And so, yeah, I think it's like this, this balance of kind of getting, you know, kind of the industry craft malt picking itself up enough to where it has something to offer, not perfect. And then having folks like Industrial Arts that are willing to say, yeah, you know, we have high standards, but we also want to be part of like this, this process of building out new solutions to make this more viable. Yeah. And then you dance around for years and then eventually you have a bona fide industry.
No, it's great to see, you know, where you guys are at. Mike or Gio, do you want to say anything else about, that question about malt?
What Phil said regarding storage, I think, is really important. So with some of our local maltsters, we've seen a real change in their mentality, and really additional storage has allowed them to sort of sleep at night because they can get malt in a bin that was designed to hold malt and keep it at the proper moisture and temperature. And that allows them to sort of hold true to the promises they've kept to the farmers. You know, I would point to one thing this year that happened this past growing season. So we in making these landscape beers, we'd grown a particular affinity to locally grown six row malt. And that sort of steered the production of really drinkable, balanced, true to style, sort of continental style beers. It was nearly impossible for us to get six row malt in New York just recently because of, you know, in some parts of the state, we had 21, 22 days of rain straight before harvest. Storage allowed Dennis, our partner at Hudson Valley Malt to hedge and to have plenty of excellent two row stored in order for us to keep making these beers. So I think that is a really important piece. I think also some of the people involved in making sure the proper quality control happens. Hartwick College has done a great job in their beverage center. And making sure that everybody's on the same page about what grows well here, what should grow here, and the difference between feed barley and malting barley.
Yeah, that's great. And that's Aaron McLeod, right?
I think he's left Hartwick, but they're still doing a great job.
Oh, that's great. Hey, I heard some cans opening. who has beers besides the great the fall landscape?
I actually just cracked one of those New York State Smash Lager we did. I think it was actually the last of Dennis's six row. We did a Smash Lager with all, excuse me, Hudson Valley six row and Crystal. Came out lovely. It was actually, I think, Mike, right? It was your concept. You were mowing the lawn one day and just sent Jess and I a ping. And we're like, this beer seems like, I remember you just being like, right, we were talking about another lager and you were like, I don't know, this is the beer I want right now.
And then 3 months later, we made it.
So Mike, what did you ping? Yeah, what did you ping? If you have this concept of a beer, how did you communicate what it was going to be?
I mean, a frequent thing that homebrewers do, or I guess always have done in order to test ingredients is make a smash beer, and that's single malt, single hop. You know, a lot of what Gio does is test out ingredients, use different malt and hop combinations that we really like. I really like Crystal hops, and I like a beer with a very clean Pilsner malt base. It's what a lot of our beers are built on. And I thought it might be really nice to just use this beautiful six row pills and these sort of lemony slash herbal crystal hops. And I don't know, that's overstating the case. It's not, it was no epiphany I had. I was just thirsty.
let's get, that was good. Kevin, you got one more time for one more question.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a question, but I think it, this kind of speaks to balance. And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about Mike, you know, and what you're doing and everybody that you have under you there is striking balance. Right. And so doing like a smash beer, you know, we look for balance. A lot of us look for balance, maybe not everybody. Some people like, I don't know, crazy stuff, but, that's not necessarily what I'm looking for necessarily. So, but with a smash beer, it's hard when you're dealing with one malt, one hop, how to skillfully be able to execute a beer, that's balanced. Right. And then in particular to do it from like one geographic area, like to do it just from New York State, that's a challenge. And that takes a lot of skill. And I think it demonstrates, you know, again, skill from these brewers. And it's awesome to see Industrial Arts, that, you know, doing that. And, you know, I hope to see more, you know, I'm in New York, so maybe I'm a little biased, but I hope to see more New York breweries doing it, because it's, you know, it's super enjoyable. And, you know, you kind of feel good. You feel good cracking these beers and knowing that it's something that's from your area and it's supporting not just the breweries, but, you know, the maltsters, the farm, you know, the farmers and everybody else. So not really a question, but just something that, you know, as a customer, you know, is exciting to see.
Thanks, Kevin. And Gio, what's it like working on these beers? I mean, what size system do you work on for your R&D? And what's another beer that's really made you really proud of the work you do?
We actually do 25 hectoliter R&D batches. So, you know, as Mike said, we opened our spot in Beacon, which is pretty much turned into our production space. Our Garnerville location will be primarily R&D projects. Yeah, this smash beer was great to make. We made what I called a land beer, which is the vaguest term for a beer ever. So I took extreme liberty with it and did a double dry hop lager with all New York ingredients. I was really happy with the way that came out, considering how kind of abstract of a concept it was.
I'll just jump in and say, I think, you know, one of the key things to me is just, like you said, it's local ingredients, right? So land beer, it speaks to the land of that region. I mean, there's this idea that it should be like rustic or, and things like that, which is fine. It's a nice story to tell. But, you know, I think a land beer should have like some terroir to it, right? And so I think you guys are kind of, you know, nailing it by doing it that way and letting these ingredients with their regionality, right? I mean, these hops and, you know, the grain, it's going to have some characteristic about its region that makes it different than if it were grown in another area. So, you know, it's awesome to see that. And so in terms of it being a land beer, I think, you know, you guys did a great job.
Thanks, Kevin.
I appreciate your deference, Kevin, because we had many discussions about how a land beer was a big, oily, extremely hoppy. It was a very, very pleasant beer, and I think Gio knocked it out of the park, but some purists would certainly disagree.
Well, you got all those fun German beers, you know, Landbier, Zwickel, Keller beer, you know. I guess You can have you can take liberties. Wow, it's so great talking to you guys. And you know, Craft Malt Conference is coming to Northeast. I'm very excited. I'm going to be there. It's like February 18th and 19th. I know Allagash is kind of big part of it being there, and Blue Ox Malt House up in Maine. You wouldn't really think of it if you haven't heard of them, but it's really exciting. And Phil, thanks for talking about this. You're the second wave of craft malt. I do remember when Valley Malt was just starting, and it was 2014. I mean, literally, we had 20 New York State breweries making a batch of beer with her, with malt that was from New York and had to be malted in Massachusetts back then. I remember Jeff O'Neill was like, made something amazing, but he also was like, basically said that, he was not ready to brew with the local malts yet. So thanks for bringing us up to date. And Mike, and Jeff, so wait, Mike, last thing. So is the landscape beer, that's like landscapers because it's lagers and it's lawnmowers? I mean, is that where that came from?
No, but no, I could see that. I mean, it's sort of, so the each label features a local artist. And that series has been the same artist, Ursula, her name is, and she works at the Garnerville Arts and Industrial Center. So landscape, is meant to evoke, the landscape of New York, the place we're from.
I love the physical and social landscape elements that you guys talk about on the website too. It's a really elegant way to get at that dynamic, those dynamics.
I think Kevin just put it better than I did.
But I think you're right, man. It's to say it's profound. And well, thanks so much again. Thanks everybody. Thanks to our engineer Armin Spengen. And let's go through the list: Mike, Gio, Phil, and Kevin. Thanks for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.